and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 610.
Whoa.
I know. We are way past our expiration date.
Like spoiled milk.
Yes. Yeah. It just coagulates a little bit more and more. It gets chunkier every week.
Listeners, are we spoiled milk or are we aging like fine wine? You can tell us. Speaking of spoiled milk.
Yeah. A chunk of not burning love. So, which brings us to Green Lantern Corps number 6, which I must admit, the main cover here isn't bad, but as sexist as it may be, I did actually, because this is the one that was pulled for me, so I have it, because I got my comics last week for the first time, like literally months, as they spent over $70 on comics. I think every single issue I think of Absolute were in there, and every issue but one of Green Lantern Corps was in there, because that's how long it's been since I think I've been there. But the paper doll cutout Jessica Cruz cover.
Yeah,
that was kind of cool. Sexist, maybe having her in her underwear, but the reality on the cover. But the reality is, I know it's not unlike the paper dolls and things like that, because it's layers. It's like onions. We're layers. All right, but yeah. So we are talking Green Lantern Corps number 6, and let's just kind of like jump into this as much as and roll through it. We're on Oa. And John Stewart, kind of the artwork is kind of sketchy in this book too, by the way, like right off the bat. But John Stewart is kind of, Sinestro is not saying a word, but just by looking at John Stewart the way he's looking at him, he knows he's kind of just he disapproves, or he's just waiting for the shoe to drop. As John Stewart continues to build all these power batteries, which is part of their master plan. Meanwhile, Ellie Rose talks to Kelly. You have to let me back inside your head. We got to figure out what this block, you know, what this that door is from last issue, what the blockage is, because it isn't natural, and it's probably what's giving you your headaches and everything else. And we'll come back to that. And the artwork here, again, shaky, because Kelly looks like completely like two or three different people in four panels. Jessica calls the usual suspects here, which is funny because Simon doesn't do anything. Not surprising, right? Simon doesn't even get an assignment out of this group, though arguably he should have one. That they need more nth metal, essentially, for the power batteries. So they did finally, which they should have done earlier, went back to look at, you know, Yzmalt and Zamaron, where the other power batteries were destroyed. But you know, Starbreaker hit those places and got it first. But Korugor, they come with the idea that the yellow power battery that was destroyed on Korugor, that metal should be there. So they want Sinestro to go through the wreckage and get the metal. The fact that Guy is the one that asks, is that a problem for you? And Sinestro, not at all. so Sinestro's heading out there. Everybody leaves except for Joe. And of course, Joe is just so intuitive. She picks up on all the distress of what's going on with Jessica. And it's like, hey, maybe no one else has noticed this, but you know, you need a break. And something Chad will talk about more. In fact, I'll let Chad talk about it completely. There's a reference to the events of the last issue of Green Lantern in here, which is not quite as we would remember them from seeing the issue. So I'm just going to leave that open, since I know Chad wants to talk about it in the recap. So Jessica gets talked out of leaving her desk assignment to go out there and spread her wings, if you will. And they end up, and where they really end up going is Mogo, who is trying to heal himself after his horrible experiences of being a Red Lantern. And he's not doing particularly well. But we'll come back to that in a second. So before Sinestro heads off to Korugor, Vexxar Rue, who we met in the first issue of this series, who there kind of was a bond almost immediately between the two of them, she asks Sinestro if she can accompany him. And Sinestro kind of like commends her on her choice of a mentor. And it's like, sure, come on, just keep up. Now with Mogo, Joe found out about what's going on with Mogo because of hearing, you know, basically hearing it through the grapevine and people reaching out, a distress call, things of that nature. Mogo's trying to heal himself, but he's also detecting their presence, and he sends out almost like these flying xenomorph alien queens to accost them, because I guess the theory behind it is that because he doesn't trust anyone because of how he was violated, which I guess is a perfectly rational explanation, actually. On New Korugor, Sinestro and company show up, and they find out that, hey, they expected New Korugor to be a complete disaster because of the central power battery being destroyed and the power source being gone. And we find out that actually it's thriving because the pieces of the former power battery have been kind of like fused together, and it's powering the battery. And it's like, whoever did this must have been, you know, must be basically be a genius. And unfortunately, this opens the door for our reunion with Sensen. And Larzad? Is that who this jabroni is?
L-O-R, I think. Lorzod.
Lorzod, okay. But either way, the super son's there that nobody really cared about. And so he's the one who basically repaired the power battery into some kind of power source to use for Korugor. Jessica and Joe try to deal with, create mechs to deal with these construct alien dragon things that they're fighting. And Jessica reaches out to Mogo and says, basically, I have to try to reach him one-on-one. She goes down. She doesn't want to put the shield up because putting a shield up would automatically potentially trigger his defenses, and she just uses her background with fear and not knowing who you can trust and feeling like you can trust anybody, but don't give in to fear and all this stuff. And essentially it works, and Mogo, he lowers his guard, and then of course it's like, oh Joe, you sly fox. Jessica is like, you brought me here on purpose, you knew this would work, or this was going to happen, didn't you? It's like, well, maybe. And it starts raining on Mogo, and a flower starts popping through the surface. Kumbaya. And on New Korugor, while Sinestro, who looks horrible again, is complimenting his son for doing what he did, it's like, well, guess what? Unfortunately, we have to take this power source, or the shell of the power source you just built, because saving the universe is more important than saving New Korugor. So we really don't have much of a choice. But of course, they do have another choice, because Zod and Sinsun deck him, send him flying, and Vexxar Rue comes to his defense, creates like a ram head on a stick, which is kind of weird.
A battering ram.
Yeah, I guess it would be kind of like a battering ram, literally. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Right, smashes right into Zod, who of course basically kind of falls in love immediately, because like, wow, because somebody could actually kick his ass. And it's like, wow, man, this is a woman for me. He is a Zod after all. He has odd perspectives on things. So Sinestro and his son keep fighting, apparently, and you might know this more than I do. I don't know when Sinsun proved that he had rage powers. Not that I care, but apparently he's been channeling rage at some point. And the fact that he hasn't exploded yet, because your willpower must be incredible. And they're duking it out, and eventually Sinestro acknowledges, you know, you've done a fantastic job here, and we'll go find some nth metal somewhere else. And conveniently enough, Sinsun puts him on the trail of a slave trader ship that has nth metal interior. Say that 1,000 times fast. And that's where Sinestro and Vexxar Rue are going to go. And as Sinestro is leaving, he tells his son that he's proud of him. That's all, you know, kumbaya. We go to the castle of the Desolate Stone, where Starbreaker, like every time we see him, he kind of looks different. I mean, he kind of looks, it's weird. That we see that in the Book of Awe, we see the talk about the gemstones, the crystals to power the power batteries. And he points out that we just need one more thing and we will feed forever. And next, the Starbreaker supremacy begins in Green Lantern 25. What page is the creative team on? Because I missed it.
First page.
First of all, the John Stewart page? Yeah, because it's small print. Because I knew it wasn't at the end. Okay, so keep your head up. Writers Morgan Hampton and Jeremy Adams. I almost said Jeremy Irons. If it was Jeremy Irons, it probably would have been better. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I apologize. Maybe I'll take that out. Artist, Omenke Naopan, Arif Prianto was the colorist. Dave Sharp, letterer. Fernando Pissarin, Oclara Albert, Arif Prianto were the cover artists. Various cover artists, Ryan Gonzalez, Edwin Galman, Natasha Bustos. They must purposely pick the most obscure, non-easy, to roll off the tongue names for this book. Assistant editor Jillian Grant, editor Kathleen Wisniewski, and Paul Kaminsky, group editor. Now, before you go, before you start, let's just point out one thing that's in this, one thing that was crystal clear in this issue upon first reading is, you know how at the end of last issue, unless you blocked it out because it was a painful memory last issue, the fact that they said this was going to be the issue that we were going to find what was going on behind the door in Kelly's head. Spoiler alert, we absolutely do not. So talk about yanking your chain. That's bad enough. That's even worse than a false cover telling you next issue you're going to find this out. And if we do not find anything close to that. So go ahead, Jeff, it's all yours.
So this issue is a great issue if it were an all ages comic book. The near Scooby-Doo levels of plot contrivance in this are insane. First of all, the Simpson and Lorzad stuff. Yes, he did at one point when we saw him last channel Rage and go up against Sinestro. That is in fact something that happened. So they know that, but they also still let him call Sinestro father and then let Sinestro do the whole "I'm proud of you" rigmarole. Last time we saw these two talk, Sinestro was giving him a massive lecture about, you know what, it actually doesn't even matter if I am your father to begin with. And, you know, we never got confirmation that he was. So, like, that's
but
a little.
But I guess now we're supposed to assume that he is.
Yeah. We're going to go ahead and. It feels as if somebody went, oh, we have these characters out there. We should use them. What are their names? What was their thing? Oh, let's not read the issues. We got the gist. Let's go from there. Now, to be very fair, if we're going to be actually fair, very much like there's hidden stuff about freaking Teen Lantern's past that we're now getting revealed now, it may be that they're setting up and bringing these characters back to remind us they're there so that they can give us a reveal of something else we're involving them much later. I will be fair and allow that point, but it still reads as if it's just way too on the nose. Specifically the fact that Mogo is splitting in half in front of them and undergoing a mental and physical crisis as a living being and member of their core. And Joe brought Jessica out here to teach her a lesson. Are you kidding me?
Mary Sue Mullen. Or Mullen. I usually say Mullen, actually.
Yeah, I think it's Mullen. So I just, it's fine if it's an all ages book, because there's the one of the hallmarks of an all ages book is it's very, very on the nose. And even artistically in some spots, this would also match an all ages book. Hey, by the way, guys, it's 13 plus. That's what it's actually rated, but that's neither here nor there. What Mark was talking about with Kelly looking three different faces across four panels. Yes, happens. She looks relatively normal that first panel. She looks all of a sudden maybe thinner, more grown up in that third panel. And then she looks somehow Asian esque in that fourth panel. I don't know what's happening there. I don't understand the weird Looney Tune-ish stuff that happened in the past two issues which were already a change in tone from the first couple of issues with the Red Lanterns and the remnants of Khorugar. And now we have this thing, which is also even more on the nose, but less comedy than the previous issues that we just got. I don't know what we're going for with this series, but it changed for a third time in terms of tone. I don't know what to expect from this. I think it's cool. Like, regardless of whether or not you liked the Super Sons stuff with Sinsen and Lorzad, they introduced new characters to this universe. I think it's cool that regardless of what we think about the characters, we're not letting these characters just sort of disappear into the ether. They're a part of the story. Again, to give people due credit or whatever, and make sure that I'm being wholly fair to this, I do think that's a cool thing. But this is just, I'm so confused by this book, even more so than I was before. And I will let us go into that part before I talk about how poorly it's being done as an actual crossover, which we'll get to that panel we spoke about earlier.
Yeah. So zeroing in on this issue in the story. Now, I said this to you before, and I'm only half kidding about this. I think part of the issue is with Joe is that, man, they just make her one. They make her an all. Maybe no one else noticed but me. It's like, why? You don't think anybody else would notice that she needs a break? Speaking of which, going along the lines of forget about, and she just happened to be the one who heard the distress signal, and she just happened to be the one who assumed this is just what Jessica needs to get her. And you will probably never hear these words coming out of my mouth again. This should have been Simon. Simon is the only one. It's not even arguable. Simon is the only one of these people that knows Jessica really well.
Already clocked it and had a conversation with her about making sure she takes time for herself or whatever.
Right. He was her sector partner. He knows what makes her tick. So the idea that, Joe can pick up on that she's in distress, but Simon can't because Joe can do anything. But it's like a double-edged. It's like if there was ever a damn perfect assignment, not the last two issues, going friggin' to get some battery for Kelly, that if there was ever a perfect assignment, if you wanted to do this, this would have been a cool Simon Jessica moment, which not only calls back to their series, but it makes sense because he understands her. But no, you got to give it to Joe because Joe's just fabulous. Joe can do anything you want her to do at any given moment. She's been in the Green Lantern Corps for 5 seconds, and yet she knows everybody's relationship and she knows everybody's backstory, and she can figure out things. It's like, it's just nauseating. The stuff with Sinestro, other than the way he was drawn, I kind of like that. I kind of like the relationship that they're working on here, establishing. That was cool. The rest, the rest of the story, it was okay. Like I said, you were correct. Mogo is. And again, they shouldn't have needed a distress signal because Mogo was sending up green constructs with ships that are getting too close to him. They're friggin' Mogo. They should damn well know to begin with. Even if there was nothing else, we might want to check on him considering what happened to him. Speaking of that, would not St. Walker going to see Mogo have made more sense? Because St. Walker and Mogo's relationship, but no logical relationships are delved into. It's like I don't blame Jeremy entirely for this, so maybe it is. I blame the editorial group for this. I blame the regime at DC that has the check boxes that we need to do this and we want this character to do that. This would have been a perfect St. Walker thing. St. Walker and Mogo have a relationship. Even if he can't physically heal St. Walker like he used to, who knows? This might have been a moment St. Walker could channel blue because of the necessity, because of the fractured spectrum, and to heal his friend. All the stuff. But no. And it's nothing against Jessica doing, because the relationship, what Jessica uses to get through to Mogo was fine. It's just that we don't need Joe there. And Joe's not the right one for that. But hey.
Yeah. Speaking, however, to the crossover, we know this is supposed to be crossing over. Just because the gathering of the materials and everything to build the batteries, the Starbreaker stuff and all that. But they're also doing this extremely lazily. There's a panel where this is when Joe stays behind to talk to Jess. And the first words out of Jess's mouth are, "The new Guardians want permission to catalog the Crypts. Hal and Carol have discovered some sort of happy emotion in a small creature that just disappeared." And then asterisk. And the asterisk says, "See Green Lantern 24. Except the very last time we saw Happy in Green Lantern 24, he was cuddling up and rubbing his nose against Carol's nose, and she was saying he seems pretty happy about heading to go to Oa or whatever. We never saw Happy disappear. Oh, and guess what? Spoiler alert for those of you who are maybe a little ahead of the game or behind, I don't know. Green Lantern, as we record this, Green Lantern 25 came out today. There's no mention there of Happy disappearing either. So I get that, in a way, mentioning things happening off panel is a interesting writing way that you can help build the universe. The story is still happening. There's parts we're not seeing, that sort of thing. And you can play with that and make the story feel bigger because there's less important things that are happening off panel that just make the story seem to move along a little quicker if you're doing this all right. Except discovering an entire emotion and it could being a potential game changer for things that they're facing, like Sorrow and Starbreaker, is something that really should be happening on panel, especially if it just disappeared.
And the funny thing about the fact that They give an asterisk referring to that issue, which, of course, like you said, the what they're actually referring to doesn't happen in the issue. But yet they don't give us an asterisk for the Sin Sun stuff, which you think is more important because they damn well know nobody read those books. Mm-hmm. You know, they know how those books sold horribly. They know nobody read those stories. So that would have been at least give us the issue that it took place in or when it first happened. The manifestation of the rage, that would actually make more sense than this. They could have given us both if, again, the little note was accurate in the sense that, you know, last time we saw that Happy, they were off to Shanghai to get Chinese food.
Yeah. They don't mention a single. I'm literally looking at 25 right now, and. And this is not a spoiler. They have a brief conversation on Oa before they go to Gem World, and then it's all about Gem World. That there's no mention of Happy, guys.
No.
At all. We learned that they lost a potential asset in a throwaway line that referenced back to a previous issue where the last time we saw this character, it was still willing and able and in the hands of Star Sapphire.
Yep.
It's great. It's a great series. This Green Lantern core series is great if it's all ages. Okay. Because at least if it's an all ages type book, I expect this type of on the nose stuff, this change in tone, this more serialized type thing, or maybe almost anthology type feeling or whatever. I don't know. I expect happenstance in an all ages book. I expect the creative team to not take it that seriously, but this is supposed to be crossing over with our main book, which we will get to in a future episode, is now having even more of its own problems. So I don't know. I still like Green Lantern more than Green Lantern Corps, but I am now even more confused about what Green Lantern Corps is.
I was thinking about this I actually was thinking about this before I reread this issue tonight when I read Green Lantern 25 earlier. We don't really know how Green Lantern Corps is being written because mm-hmm. we know that there's two writers. We don't necessarily know that Jeremy is actually really, really, really co-writing the script for this book. I'm kind of suspecting maybe he's just doing the story. Maybe he's doing not just the synopsis, but the story. But I guess you could view it as a synopsis that we're giving him. Jeremy is writing and saying this is what happens in this issue. And maybe he's not the one actually doing the script, because that would at least allow for some of these things, some of these things that don't really jibe correctly. Maybe because either because of a misunderstanding or of what happened in the last book or just or whatever. I'm not sure. I'm just spitballing, but I don't know, because it seems like between the books, and again, this is kind of like a something else Chad is alluding to, but so I meant I'll go to into it slightly because I brought the subject up related to this issue, that this was the issue we were supposed to find out what was behind the wall in Kelly's brain. Well, we still don't find out what's behind the wall in Kelly's brain, but we actually at least explore the idea where at least Ellie Rose seemingly finds out what's behind Kelly's brain. We just don't get to reveal what it is. But that happens in Green Lantern 25, but it was supposed to happen here. And even if that was a mistake, we really should have said it. We shouldn't have implied it was going to happen in the next issue of Core. It technically still didn't really happen. But either way, I don't know. This story has had tons of potential. The concept of the fractured spectrum. And it kind of just bothers me that, again, you know, fractured spectrum just kind of disappeared overnight, even though they reference it in the beginning of Green Lantern 25. But this seems like it's another, like, a little pattern with Jeremy. It's like we never got a name for that lantern, that the Derlin story. We never really got a name for it, but then it just drifted into the Civil Core, which never made any sense, really, because not a great explanation. Then it just ended. This whole arc is supposed to have been the fractured spectrum, and then all of a sudden, like, you don't even, other than the term being used in the beginning of Green Lantern 25, we really don't hear it anymore, and it just goes, oh, the Starbreaker supremacy begins. Not even something like, you know, fractured spectrum enters its final phase as Starbreaker supremacy begins. Not even anything like that. It's just like, oh, now it's just the Starbreaker supremacy. It's like, what happened to the fractured spectrum? As the overarching story, it's like, this had a lot of potential, and it's really, really, really gone off the rails, I think, a lot. And it's still a more interesting story than the Derlin United Planets thing, but that's, again, what kind of compliment is that? I mean, I don't know. It's frustrating.
So I'm over on leagueofcomicgeeks.com. I'm seeing lots of positive reviews. It looks like an average of about 4 to 3.5 stars. I see a couple of 4.5, couple of 5s, but also like a couple of 3s as well. So
for this specific issue.
Some people are feeling what we were feeling, but lots of people are still very positive about this. I'm not blaming you guys. If you're liking it, you're liking it. Great. Enjoy. I'm glad. And this thing, like I said, there are some things about this story that are interesting. Some characters they bring in, some concepts they play with. Again, part of what I was looking forward to in a future anthology series of whatever is not just focusing on different lanterns, but let's change the tone. Let's have a mystery. Let's have a comedy. Let's have a romance. Let's have different stories that we can tell with these characters, because they can go to any genre. So they're kind of playing with some of the things that we want. It's just, it's being done in a way that it feels very haphazard, and I don't know what to think anymore. And again, the tie-in stuff, it makes sense to be like, you know what, it's a real easy thing to be like, yeah, you can, and in addition to just, you know, hey, read the story as it continues and in Green Lantern 25, and then Green Lantern 25 teases Green Lantern Core 7 or whatever, like, that's one thing. But to have it To do the little thing like, you know, I'm doing a quick info dump. Let me reference something real quick that happened in a previous issue to give even more of this feeling of connectedness. And even the one thing you're referencing is wrong because we never saw it on panel. And it should be something that's important enough that we really should. It's haphazard. And that's all I got to say about it. I'm not going to harp anymore, but that's all.
There'll be a time and a place, because, hey, as we'll talk about soon, if we have the very first page of the next issue where there's a mistake based on what one character is saying and what we're physically seeing.
Yeah.
So, right. I mean, a huge plot point right off the bat. It's like, and it also begins with what they tell you is like the one of the worst things you could do when you're writing something. It's like, as you all know, but then you proceed to tell us.
It's like, which this issue also did.
Yeah, this issue was, yes.
No, because Jessica starts her whole meeting off with everybody going, hey, as you know.
Did she literally say that in this issue, too?
Yeah, so.
Let me go. I still have it open.
I've got bad news and some worse news. As you know, we're in a race against time.
You're right. Yep. But you're right. It's the same. So this we have to blame on Jeremy because that's the only common thread.
Yeah.
But the reality is this is bad. But in Green Lantern 25, I think it's even worse probably because I think because it's the Guardians talking and the one Guardian I think says as you all. I think they said as you all know. Or something, yeah. But you're right. It's the same basic concept. It's like if everybody here knows what you're about to say, you don't need to say it, or you need to reference it in a different way. Not go back and give us the entire. Not say as you all know. It's like if we all know we're trying to rebuild the power batteries to stabilize the emotional spectrum. You don't need to reference that. You can just mention reference. The reason why, see, I bought it slightly more in the Starbreaker Supremacy issue, number 25, only because, even though I think it's kind of a joke to really think this would be the case, but because it's almost set up as more of a jumping on point because it's the first issue of a new arc, kind of, yeah. Sort of. But it's still, again, it's not handled the best, no. But you're right. Now that you put the two, I've almost forgot she used literally almost the same language. So, yeah, that's back-to-back issues, and there may be more of these if we went back with a fine-tooth comb going back and it's like trope of as you all know and let me tell you everything that you already know. It's like then okay.
But that's it. I don't want it to seem like I am being overly critical of this. It's just I again more confused than I was previously, and I was I need some stability and in this series. I don't want to say something like I need better writing or I need more consistent art or I need, you know, them to get their shit together or whatever sort of highly critical thing I should say. It's just it's a confusing mess. Clean it up. So that's all I got.
Which probably wasn't any nicer than the other ways of describing it, but it's but I'm glad because the reality is we can only sugarcoat stuff so much. The reality is there's a lot of enthusiasm for the core book, and maybe people are liking this book more because, let's be honest, since the core book launched, it's been selling better than Green Lantern, based on the ICV2 numbers anyway. It's been a better selling book than Green Lantern, so maybe people are judging this on its own, not as part of a saga, or the you know, reading back and forth up to this point, so maybe they don't care that it's the mistakes.
But that's it. So if anybody has different opinions than us, again, we welcome them. Send us some feedback. Mark will let you know at the end of the show how to do that. But again, according to LeagueOfComicGeeks.com, some people are really enjoying this series, including this issue. So I'm not asking you to defend your position, but if you have a different opinion than ours, let us know what it is. We're happy to hear it.
Yes, we are.
Should we get on to some podcast business?
Not quite yet, Chad.
Okay, what do you want to do?
So, two things before we delve into that. So, with what have I seen?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So, what Mark has seen, unfortunately, for better or for worse, what Mark has seen was I Know What You Did Last Summer. Mm-hmm. So, how one feels about this movie probably will greatly depend on how one feels about the first two movies and the legacy characters that are in this movie, since there's a lot of what plays out is, even though there's not a lot of screen time for any of the legacy characters, but they do factor heavily into the plot and the ending. So if you buy it and it's understandable. I mean, the concept I'm okay with. I just don't think it was executed well. That's all I'm going to say. I think the idea of where they were going and the fact that was it bold? It's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off. That the boldness can be respected. I don't know. It's overall the movie was okay. That's not one of my favorite franchises, horror franchises. So it's I enjoyed it for what it is. I will probably watch. I'm trying to remember if that's Sony. Either way, I will watch it probably one more time given the opportunity. But I don't see this as something I'm going to be going back to the well over and over again. It's not rewatchable the way I think both Scream 5 and Scream 6 are more 5 are rewatchable. So there's that. One thing which was interesting was announced today that was going to get swallowed up as Fantastic Four is about to come out. And that's okay for now because it's not critically important. But Disney announced that Chris Sanders is going to be writing the sequel to the live action Lilo and Stitch. So that's kind of important considering Chris Sanders was the original director, one of the two original directors of the animated, and one of the co-writers of the animated, and of course is known by most people who would know the name, has also created How to Train Your Dragon with Du Bois, but he's also the voice of Stitch. So the fact that he's actually going to be writing the sequel probably dramatically increases that the sequel will be good, probably be better than the first live action Lilo and Stitch. So I thought that was pretty cool. And there is actually one other thing related to Guy, but we can bookend that with where Chad wants to go next.
Yeah. We rarely talk about personal growth or goals or followers or any of that stuff on the show, just because, again, this podcast has been on the air since 2008. So there's not often an opportunity to do that. That said, I was on Twitter the other day and someone had posted just an image because of, you know, the Superman movie being out. You know, someone posted an image of Guy from the movie and said, "Say one nice thing about him," to which somebody else retweeted that and said, "My boyfriend, who knows a lot more about Green Lantern lore than me, who knows nothing, said this was the perfect adaptation of Guy Gardner exactly because he was insufferable." Her tweet sort of went viral. It has like nearly 8 million views, all sorts of stuff. I didn't see it when it was like particularly big, but just being on the Lantern Cast account, happening to see things related to Green Lantern because that's what we interact with over there, it showed up in the feed. So I just responded to it and said, "As a podcast about Green Lantern that's been on the air for 16 years plus, your boyfriend is right." I reached out to Mark about this as it was happening, and already it was fairly big. I had already said something about a couple of thousand views or whatever, something like that. I'm trying to find it in our thread, but it's escaped. Oh yeah, 41,000. When I let Mark know about what had happened, I said 41,000 people have seen the tweet, and 1.4k people liked it, and nearly 50 new people followed us on Twitter. That changed because as of now, that tweet has been liked 7.1K times. 162,000 people have seen it. And we were on Twitter. Our followers had sort of stagnated around 1.2K. I tweeted just yesterday about this growth and thanking people for following us and stuff like that. Yesterday, we were at 1,501 followers. Today, we're at 1,544 followers. So 43 new people have followed us in less than 24 hours. In addition to the 300 plus that followed us on the initial like peak of this whole thing. That's not massive. That's not what you would consider necessarily viral in this landscape, but that's more growth than we've seen in a long while for this show. And that's not me saying, you know, "Hey, praise to me. I tweeted at the right time or didn't." None of this is at me. I'm just absolutely shocked because I didn't intend anything to happen. I was just engaging with the audience who, you know, new people are being introduced to Green Lantern. There's more Green Lantern content out there to interact and engage with. Why not just, you know, respond to some people, like a couple of things, maybe we get a new follower or whatever. This was unprecedented. You can't buy this sort of engagement in terms of, I've actually paid for social media ads for us on occasion here and there, maybe what, 3 times total, Mark, something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
And we've never had this, ever. So the fact that now do 300 plus new Twitter followers necessarily mean all 300 are listening to us? No. But some of them definitely are, because I saw some of the responses to that tweet that we sent out being like, "How do you have this much content?" or "You've got a new listener" and stuff like that. So I thought, given this is our first recorded episode after this random thing happening over on social media, that it was worth talking about, because it also brings up the point of, is Guy Gardner's is Guy Gardner's role, or Nathan Fillion's role as Guy Gardner in the Superman movie, already starting to change the conversation a little bit around the character and franchise of Green Lantern as we head into the TV show?
Probably. I would say so. And on that level, you have to give James Gunn the credit for the fact that, number one, did the guy have to be the one that he put on the screen? No, he could have put one of the others on the screen, but he, like we talked about in the review, he chose to portray Guy in a way that shows and plays up his obnoxious and head shaking qualities, but in yet a likable fashion, and not the most ridiculously the insufferable dialed up to like 100. That was not where you couldn't just stand the guy. That's not the Guy Gardner that we got. And nor did we get the idiot Guy Gardner who's just so blinded or so narrow-minded that he can never think there's another alternative, period, or he's easily led down the path that you want to go down. So I think it's smart, and this could very well be what James Gunn wanted all along, to pave the way to kind of be the mouthwash, the deodorant, to try to dissipate some of the Ryan Reynolds inflicted stench on the franchise, on the brand. So as we roll into next summer and we get Lanterns, that at least that now a great deal of people's last encounter with a live action Green Lantern is going to be not so much of a joke from a power perspective, or the concept of the characters is ridiculous. And it's like, how would they think this could ever work on screen? Nothing like that. So I do think that it's an important opening salvo, and probably rehabilitating the image of the Green Lantern Corps as a whole. And kudos to him, since Lord knows DC just kind of it wasn't all their fault allowing this to fester over the last 12 years or whatever, or actually 14 years now. Because of the mouth that roared just wouldn't shut the F up about it. That's really one of the biggest reasons. Even if they wanted to move on, it would have been hard unless they really had a solid project. I think they could have done it. I think in a way it kind of became it self-perpetuated because of the fact that it's like a rumor. It's like you don't feel the need. You have to address every rumor head on. But sometimes if you don't, then people are just going to assume, well, you're not denying it, so it must be true. So in this case, they kind of allowed Ryan Reynolds to just kind of like ha 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 at their expense for almost 15 years. So the reality is the DC could have made a concerted effort, but they were afraid because, the first movie didn't do well. So dying on that hill didn't seem like a worthwhile battle or attempt. But
yeah, for sure. I think too, and we didn't necessarily talk about it in the Superman review, I think it was maybe something maybe just all of us understood, but we didn't necessarily voice. It was an interesting choice too, where it's obvious, right? Because it's a Superman movie. It's not a Green Lantern movie, but you put a Green Lantern in the movie. It's interesting that nothing that was in there even felt like an on the nose attempt to try and redeem the franchising character to the audience. Like they just let Guy be Guy, basically. And his character, power set, all that stuff sort of speak for itself and show what it can really do on the screen, what it can really offer in that situation, as opposed to trying to overcompensate and win back anything based on the 2011 movie.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good point. They just basically not just let Guy be Guy, but they let a Green Lantern and what a Green Lantern can do speak for itself, and they didn't have to worry, and they didn't worry about anything other than that. And it's like they had the confidence that, okay, we do this, and basically the actor portrays the character the right way, and the special effects, they may have had a specific idea of how to do the special effects differently than, or even if it wasn't differently, but they had a dedicated idea. This is how we want the power to look, and we think between that and the performance, that's going to be enough to just make people interested. And we're not overly concerned about the baggage, because once people see this, the baggage is going to kind of dissipate into the ether. And that was, mm-hmm. and that was the right approach. So
100%. I wanted to just thank everybody if anybody's new listening, because of that, interaction on Twitter or whatever, feel free to reach out. Let us know, you know, if that's how you discovered us, and if you're liking what you're hearing so far, or your thoughts on Green Lantern and everything. I do want to say thank you, though, specifically. The reason I wanted to take the time out and say thank you is because peeling back the curtain, and I've said this before on the show, but because the podcast has been on the air so long, we do things a little old school around here. For instance, there's XML files that we update manually to post the podcast, as opposed to just using a feed burner and all of that stuff. A side effect of being on the air this long is because we started as before even Spotify existed, by the way. We're older than Spotify, people. Our podcast was primarily found on Apple Podcasts. Well, the sign-in for that account has been lost to the ages. It was set up at a time where we don't even have these emails anymore, but at the time we used to have like jim@lanterncast.com, chad@lanterncast.com, and I think those accounts may have been associated to those old emails. So trying to get back into our Lanterncast login for Apple Podcasts to access the stats, which are normally what people ask for if you're doing some sort of collaborative effort with, say, DC or whatever, you're trying to get an interview or trying to get a press pass to a convention. They ask for your stats and view numbers and all that sort of stuff. We have access to that information from Spotify, but we've lost that information to Apple Podcasts, you know, over the years. And you know, I've checked with Jim and Dan. Nobody knows the logins anymore. So I think that's a lost cause. But I bring all this up to say, other things that we can track, like follower count and engagement on social media profiles, can help offset that sort of thing. So it's not that we use those numbers that often, but for us to receive that level of growth randomly, despite being as old as we are as a podcast, is really helpful. Because again, you can't buy that sort of engagement right now in the social media space. So the fact that that was organic, that seems a lot of people who either have already known about Green Lantern or been reading about him and just now discovered that there's a podcast out there, or people who are just new to the concept of Green Lantern because of the film found us in a very organic way, means every new follow wasn't bought. It wasn't coerced. It wasn't a part of some a contest we were running or anything like that, people trying to get a prize or whatever. This is all people genuinely interested in Green Lantern and curious that there's somebody out there who's producing content on it. And the fact that people are reaching out is really interesting. And I wanted to say thank you to those people. That's the only reason I wanted to talk about this right now.
No, nicely put. I think that it's good. The many things that's good about kind of like these resurgence now, interest in DC as a whole, opportunities like this to get new followers, get more listeners, get more people interested in the character of Green Lantern. And it's like, hey, on the bright side, it's like, hey, if you got pulled in by Guy Gardner, wait till you find some Green Lanterns that aren't as insufferable.
for sure. And really quickly, I'm not going to pitch it other than to say, because it's related to Guy Gardner, the toy unboxing I told you guys all about is on our YouTube channel, Lantern Cast Vids. Go check it out. That is also up as promised.
Yes. And one thing related to this, you probably saw this. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but when Nathan Fillion did that interview and he said that he did not have any, he didn't film any scenes with Kyle Chandler for this show, which of course doesn't necessarily at all mean that Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner don't have any scenes together. It just means that he didn't literally film anything side by side on set with Kyle Chandler, but it doesn't mean through the magic of editing and splicing that these two characters aren't going to interact. It just means they weren't face to face when they did it. But I don't know. I'm not going to lie. At first, my natural reaction before you kind of look, again, looking behind the curtain and understanding how things are made, it's like having every phone call that ever takes place in a TV show. It's like you realize that these characters are now literally like facing each other or the divider in the same room most 99.9% of the time. If they're doing that, they're just talking into it. You know, it's like doing voiceover work. It's like they're just pretty much in a studio by themselves. That it bothered me, though, because I guess just because it kind of just reinforces more what I think everybody believes, is that this is just kind of like, this is just a coming out party for Jon Stewart first and foremost. But
yeah, it's we also don't know the extent, though, that guy's involved. We assume he's more than just like, you know, the final episode cameo saying, hey, something came up on Earth, or, you know, whatever, or the beginning of the episode cameo letting him know something happened on Earth. Yeah, I guess it, you know, remains to be seen, but it did feel a little weird that he didn't have any direct interaction.
It did strike me as odd. It did, and it's not, and I guess especially because we're on the high of Guy Gardner and everything we just talked about now. So it took a slight amount of wind out of the sails for me, just because it's like, well, we know technically speaking, Guy and John really do have a closer relationship for the most part. That's not a big problem for me. Of course, it would be more understandable again if they were more of the same age group. So like if they had made Guy younger and they made John younger and they made Hal older, then I kind of would see that more, because it would be a natural reason why Guy and John would be gravitate towards each other more. I do hope there's at least some on-screen interaction between Guy and Hal, just because. I mean, because again, in all honesty, we really don't know how much we're ever going to see Kyle Chandler / Hal Jordan in this universe. And not talking animated, we're talking live, like I said, live action. So we don't know if we're ever going to see Hal Jordan again, depending how this works and how this ends. Not so much how it works, how it ends. We don't know what they're doing with Hal. We don't know if this is a road to Parallax, or they're just going to off him somehow, or he's just going to retire, or they're just going to have him finally, you know, completely retire in theory and walk away. So in case, you know, you could always pull him out of retirement, Lethal Weapon style, if you needed to. We don't know, but I would like Guy and Hal to have some kind of interaction.
Do we know anything about the runtime of each episode?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, because depending on how long the episode, like if we're talking HBO style episodes, you know, near an hour, hour 15, hour and a half, depending or whatever, that, you know, I don't know that it would make it better in a 180, but maybe would make if they were doing, you know, taking Hal off the board or doing a Parallax thing, you know, the runtime of the episodes, the actual physical amount of time we get to see him on screen, if we got more of it, as opposed to a 30, 45 minute episode, you know, per episode sort of thing, might make things a little better, a little more palatable. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that is valid too. I think it does depend how much Hal Jordan we're actually going to get in this. I think, and again, where they leave off. If they leave off with him just retiring, that's okay. If they give you something rather ambiguous about what happened to Hal, I probably would be okay with that too. Even though, again, you can't kick that can down the road too long, because again, Kyle Chandler looks good for his age, but he is like almost 60. So
I think he is 60, isn't he?
Is he? He might be. I thought he was 59. But he may have had a birthday before since he was cast and since they started filming.
When Lanterns actually releases, he will be exactly 60. His birthday is September 17th.
Next year.
No, this coming.
Oh, you're right. You're right. He will be almost 61 then.
Yeah.
When it comes out.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. I'm looking forward to it. I would have more faith in it if James Gunn was actually doing the show himself. I do have reservations about King and what's his name? I just lost it. Lost there. Oh God, I see it.
I didn't watch Lost, so
I see his face. I'll find it in a second. But I do have some reservations about the creative team. So that gives me pause. Damon Lindelof, that's the guy. So that gives me a little trepidation, but we will see. Hopefully again, James Gunn is hands on enough to make sure it's going in the direction he wants. But again, the direction he seemingly clearly wants is Jon Stewart to be his Green Lantern, which again will help make some people happy, but I don't necessarily know if it makes either one of us happy.
Yeah. But I think, is that it? Do we have anything else?
No, I don't have anything else. I just, like I said, I had the guy thing, but I figured it would bookend perfectly towards at the end of the stuff about the social media.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us to if they're new followers or if they're those folks out there who are actually really enjoying the core series or whatever, anybody who wants to reach out to us, what do they need to do?
Lanterncast.com. The email is lanterncast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter. See, told you not to give up on Twitter, Chad. Hashtag GLcast to track us down everywhere. Like us on Facebook. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think. And we have Discord too. If you're interested in our Discord, email us at LanternCast. Email us lanterncast@gmail.com, and we will send you the link.
For sure. Good night, everybody.
Good night.